Hello, everyone. This is Rusty Gilligan from Mac and Trouble, and you're listening to Superheroes Speak.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And I am less caffeinated than Dave.
Hey, it's Mountain Dew. It does a body good.
Not 3 gallons of it.
Oh, I've never learned how to take things in small amounts. I like it, and I like it big. So anyway.
And this is John.
We are here to talk about a little bit more on the Wizard World, but before we speak of the other interviews we're presenting you today, I want to give you, our audience, a little bit of update on what's going on with Superhero Speak. If you haven't done so, please go back and listen to our last episode, which is called Retcon Happens, and it is the first audition of the candidates that we have to replace our good friend Ben.
Yes. Once we get a few of them in, we will put them in a battle royale.
Yes. Fight to the death.
The one that's left alive with most of their limbs wins.
Yes. I mean, technically, they only need, you know, whatever hand they write with. And maybe a leg to get around. So we'll see. So please go listen to JD is our first candidate. We liked talking with him. We hope you enjoyed him and let us know. And of course it's tough until you get somebody to compare him to, and that will be in our next episode.
They already have us to compare him to, so he's already winning.
Oh, that's true. And the other thing that I want our good listeners to know is, As of yesterday, technically, we have launched a Teespring website, and it's teespring.com/superhero speak, of course. There's a link to it.
Did you say it again? Because you didn't tell me about this, so, you know, yeah. It'd be nice if I were, like, you know, in the loop. I am the only other part of the loop.
Teespring.com, and it's actually, hold on. Let me check something real quick. Hit my back button here because it might be super-hero-speak. Yes, it is. Sorry. It's teespring.com/stores/super-hero-speak. But don't worry about knowing all of that. There's a link in this episode, and there will be a link in every episode going forward. Right now, we have 2 t-shirts available on the website. The first, of course, is the official Superhero Speak t-shirt. It is emblazoned with the name of the podcast and our logo, which was created by former co-host Ben and then drawn by one of the best comic book artists in the business today. I have to say that or he gets very sad. And, of course, I'm talking about Greg Horn. But it's a beautiful shirt. And, you know, and as the description says on the website, this shirt not only shows that you love good art done by good artists, you also have good tastes in podcast. So check it out. And if you like it, please buy it and help support the podcast. Because, you know, John's alcohol is not cheap.
It isn't. Only the good stuff. I need it aged at least 18 years.
See? And then available for a limited time only is the Retcon Happens t-shirt. It's emblazoned with the Retcon Happens on the front and on the back. Yes, it's a two-sided t-shirt. See what you're getting for this quality merchandise that we're creating? Are some of the greatest Retcon moments in history. You know, Han shot first, Peter and MJ forever, John Connor was not a Terminator, and what new 50? So this is a limited time shirt. It'll probably be up for, it's going to be up for a few weeks.
But 3 days, 2 hours, 35 minutes.
No, ignore that timer right now, John. That's that's not official.
And it looks down.
And so once we take it down, we won't put the shirt back up. If you ever see it again, it'll be changed. Either the colors will be changed or the sayings on the what's on the back will be changed. So that's the plan. So if you want the Retcon Happens t-shirt, you need to act fast. So you have, well, I think we're going to have it up for 3 weeks. So, you know, check it out. And there is going to. So,
make sure you handle them with care, because, you know, with something like asbestos, because, you know, the way Dave keeps saying emblazoned, I assume they just burst into flame when you pull them out of the package.
Shh, don't give away our secrets. And there is going to be a third t-shirt up, and that is the Retcon Superhero Speak 2017 shirt, because this is an internal joke between Ben and I. With the looking of for a new co-host, we're essentially retconning the podcast. So,
oh, great.
That will also be a limited time t-shirt. So if you like any of those shirts, you know, if you like any of those two, limited shirts, make sure you jump on them. And of course the official shirt will always be.
Wait, when we retcon the show, can we make you better looking?
No.
Just a, you know, a suggestion, really.
No, what we're going to do is make you look worse, so I look better by comparison.
That's not really possible.
So they are the two big announcements I had. For now, there is one more. I mentioned it in the last podcast, but I'm going to mention it again. Make sure you check out our website every Saturday. That's superheroespeak.com for our weekly wrap-up, where we collect some of the news from that week and give you links, or we embed the videos for trailers that come out, stuff that you might have missed that week in Geek. You know, but again, that's some of the changes that we currently have, and there's more coming, people, because we love you. We want to make you happy.
Good.
Or
okay.
At least that's what John tells me to say.
Well, yeah.
All right, now on to business. Why were we really here? We've got so many. Oh, well, then that one last thing, and it's related to why we're here, John. Going forward, for the foreseeable future, as you're seeing, this is Friday that we release this, and you can say, hey, that's the second episode in a week, just like last week. So for the foreseeable future, we will be doing two episodes a week. Wednesday will be our regularly scheduled podcast, and Friday will be interviews from Wizard World Philly, and it might end up, if people are good with it, we might end up releasing a second episode every Friday. You guys have to let us know, so, if you like it or not. If it's too much superhero speak, we understand John's a lot to take. Just let us know. Sorry, John.
No, it's okay.
Ben's not here to make fun of. I mean, it's, you know.
I'll take the brunt of it. No worries.
So.
I mean, that's why you pay me in brandy, right?
Yes. Yes. So you're numb to it. So we need to now, why we're here, it's why this is happening on a Friday, is we have three more great interviews from Wizard World to present to the people. And the first one I'm not even in, so.
So it's got to be good.
Yes. So go ahead, John. Why don't you tell us about Maxina Storybrook?
Maxina Storybrook.
Maxina?
Okay. Maxina? Yes. At least I'm probably sure of that. I mean, I was there, did the interview and all that, but this is Superhero Speak, so I could have just murdered that right there.
And yes.
Then. So Maxina Storybrook has written a book. She's a young writer, and funny little story. When I went up to her booth, there was a lady behind the counter, and there was a cosplayer in front, and I asked the lady behind the counter, so can I interview you for your book? And she said, why don't you talk to the real author, and pointed to the cosplayer. That'll teach me. So Maxine is like really young, but she went through the process of writing this book, getting it published, doing it all herself. And it's pretty damn awesome and impressive. And the first book in her series is, let's see, it is, oh my God, I should have been ready for this. It is called Denarco. One. Yeah. And I don't know, it's a sort of a urban fantasy story, and well, she's going to tell us all about it. She's a really nice woman, and here you go.
So what do you think of the current political situation? No. So this is John, and I'm with Superhero Speak, and I am here with, your name is?
Maxina Storybrooke.
Maxina Storybrooke, okay. And you are an author that I have just accosted and thrown a microphone at.
More like I accosted you, but...
I wish. But you've got a book here, and it's called, what is it?
Danarco.
And if you want, you tell us a little bit about what it, you know, what's your elevator pitch? What's the storyline?
My favorite, the elevator pitch. Okay, so Danarco starts off with Mara coming home one day to her and her mother being attacked by an assassin. And the assassin mortally wounds Mara. Her half-fae guardian appears literally out of nowhere through a portal and stops the assassin, taking Mara and her mother to a safe location. But as they're traversing through the interdimensional membrane in between the realms, a seal in Mara's mind breaks and she passes out from the pain. When she wakes up the very next day, not only is the bullet wound in her side completely healed, but there are sparks coming out of her fingers. Being a 21st century person, that's not too normal, is it?
No. So this is, as you described it, it is urban science fantasy?
Somewhat, yes. Essentially, it starts out in the 21st century. Mara grew up on Earth, not knowing her past, not knowing who her family was, mm-hmm. or even what they were. And so she ends up getting thrown into this other world, this entirely different realm with different culture, different type of science, very futuristic and advanced. It's based off of an energy source in the atmosphere that literally eats the pollution and converts it into itself. So, and one of the species that's actually on that, what Earthlings known as elves, they actually were affected by it about 6,000 years ago and can utilize that energy source as an actual function. Like, they can manipulate it, they can change it, they can morph it. They use it in their medical staff, they use it in science, they use it in their buildings. Mm-hmm. It's like an energy source to them. But to Earthlings, they think that it's magic.
So, let me see here. There's a lot to unpack. First off, how did you start this?
I was 7 years old when I came up with the idea. Started drafting out the idea when I was 9. But my mom literally stopped and told me, no, you need to wait until you're older for something like this. So I did. I finished high school and tried writing it again. And my mom said, nope, you still need more experience. So I went to college. I actually graduated early from high school, went to college early, graduated with a bachelor's in English, and said, I need more experience. It wasn't my mom this time. It was actually me. And I said, I need more experience. Got my master's in creative writing for the entertainment industry through Full Sail University at the age of 21. And finally said, okay, that's it. I'm sitting down. I am writing this book, and it is going to be brilliant. And so far, none of my fans have complained.
Nice. And how did you find... Well, first off, the first sign of wisdom is knowing that you need more wisdom, right?
Yeah.
But, and I can understand, because we've talked to a lot of other authors that have said, you know, yeah, it didn't feel the time was right to write the book until I got to a point where I actually understood what my main character was supposedly have gone through. What was, when you started writing, did you take courses on it? What did you find, like, was the hardest thing when you were writing? Because a lot of people try to go and write and, you know, either they have problems with characterization or description, or, you know, you don't want to go down the Robert Jordan route where you, you know, 3 chapters on how a leaf looks as it glistens in the sunlight. But on the other hand, you don't want to just gloss over everything and just do a lot of dialogue. And dialogue's another thing.
Yeah.
So what was your experience while you were writing it?
While I was writing it, the thing with me is that when I write a story, it plays out like a movie in my head, so it's just getting it down right and writing the correct phrases to describe whatever scene it is in my head. That's where my college experience and all my creative writing classes came in hand, is that they helped me describe those scenes properly. They helped me write the dialogue properly. Because before, I didn't know what sarcasm was, for example. Had no clue. One of the characters in my book is like 90% sarcasm. So really, I needed more experience because I was homeschooled as a child. So I needed more experience in life in general to be able to write about these characters, because it's almost like I was a bystander. I was just looking on, seeing it, not knowing anything. Yet out in college and in life, that's where you learn about those things, like sarcasm and
yeah,
and everything else like that. But overall, the hardest part of my writing process has actually just been sticking to it. Just actually sitting down, cranking out the words and everything else like that. And that's where I've actually found support in writing groups.
Okay.
Not actually from my college experience, but writing groups, other writers. And having their motivation to write actually inspires me to write more.
And you, how'd you find those?
There's this yearly program, organization. It's called NaNoWriMo. It's called National Novel Writing Month. It's in November. And you can find the site online. It's NaNoWriMo.org. And it's 50,000 words in 30 days. My personal goal has always been 100,000 words, which is the average length of my novels.
Wow. Okay.
And so far, I've met that goal, and I've done the event twice now. Mm-hmm. And each area has, you could say, a leader, and that leader helps organize events, organize functions that other writers can come to, and it's like a group writing. There's sprints. Sprints, word wars, and everything else like that, just to help inspire other writers to just continue cranking out those words. Mm-hmm. And I found that those groups were really helpful in getting my own word count in there.
Very good. And so the novel is young adult to above, or?
Yep, teen, young adult. I wrote it for the age group of really those who read Harry Potter, Aragon, and all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Divergent, even. Yeah. Hunger Games, Maze Runner.
Yep.
Those kind of categories, Star Wars, Star Trek. It's mainly for the people who like those books, but I've known people outside of those genres too who really like my book, and they were surprised that they liked it.
Now, this is the first book then?
Yes, it's the first in a quartet.
All right, so like with Harry Potter, the first book was definitely young adult. But
yeah,
as it got to, you know, book number 9, it got increasingly darker and kind of actually raised the age limit with the population that had started with the first book. Are you planning to get darker as you go along, or is this going to be kind of even-keeled?
It gets slightly darker as you go along, but it mainly stays the same. I kind of play a balancing game because I like to say 12 and up is the general age range. But again, if you're an advanced reader at 9 years old like I was, you'll be fine.
So you've already got it all planned out then?
Yes. Yeah. It's a multiverse series. So there's this series, then there's going to be another series after it, and a lot of branching side stories.
Okay. Very good. Now, when you were when you finished the book, how'd you go about getting it published?
I decided to go the self-publishing route for various reasons. One being that I like to travel. I like to market my own book. I like to tell people about it. I don't like to just sit behind the table and just go, hey, I'm here. No, I like to actually get involved with the people as well because I like showing them what my book is and everything else like that.
Even dressing up and going so far as dress up as your character.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Like right now I'm dressed as Mara, the main character.
Okay.
And so I decided to go the self-publishing route, and that was actually pretty simplistic, actually. I hired an editor, I hired a cover artist, and I went through CreateSpace, Amazon's self-publishing program.
Okay.
Yep. And so for any other self-published people, I also recommend them getting an actual editor as well because there's still the stigma around self-published not being the best.
Yeah.
But as long as you get a good editor and they can help you with content, story, character, flaws, plot holes, and also grammar, definitely grammar, for those grammar Nazis like myself, you should be good. You should be good to go. You can get it as polished up just like any other traditional book.
Hmm. So you've been a geek your whole life. Is this your first con? Actually, I didn't even know
No, it is not. This is my second Wizard World, but my fourth or fifth convention. But I started working the conventions just this year.
Okay. And how are you finding it?
I'm loving it. I'm loving it. The only downside to it all is that I am such a big geek. So...
Oh, so you're working it, but you're not getting out to go around and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because the conventions are always so much fun. And I remember going to them when I was younger, so...
Yeah. I've been on that same side, too, because sometimes we're at Greghorn's table.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if you're stuck there, you're looking around going, oh, I want to be out. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Then you remember the pain of your feet after 3 days of walking around.
Yes, especially the days that I dress as the tyrant from my book, and then I'm in heels all day long.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
That's gotta hurt. All right, so you got your first book. Is the second book coming out? Or?
Yes, actually in a couple of months. Just right around the corner. I'm hoping the prospective release date is August.
Excellent.
So,
and where can people find you online?
Online, Amazon mostly.
Okay.
I'm actually going to be, I'm thinking about switching my printing companies.
All right.
So I'm hoping to be able to branch out to like Kobo and, you know, iTunes or iBooks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually about to release the audiobook for DeNarco, the first book. So right after that, once I get Echolane, the second book out, I'll also be releasing that. So it'll also be in Audibles. But by switching the printing company, I'm also hoping to get it into the bigger, more mainstream bookstores like Barnes & Noble and everything else like that.
Yeah. Did you actually have to find a voice actor, or did somebody volunteer for that to do the reading? Or
kind of both. Audibles has a program to where, you know, list the book, actors and actresses can submit their audition, as it's called, and you get to pick.
Oh, neat.
Though I did actually reach out to a couple. One of them did respond, and she was very interested, and so she did the audition, and she actually was my favorite out of, like, 10 auditions that I got, so... I ended up going with her anyway.
That's cool. You're the first author I've talked to that actually had that experience of, you know, getting somebody to do the audiobook too.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. All right. So the way we like to end these interviews is ask a question. I'm sorry. I'm contractually obligated. How do you measure success?
How do I measure success? Well, I don't really like to measure success based on money. That's for sure. More like how you feel how you did. So if you feel like you did good, then you were successful. If you feel like you got good experience, you were successful. If you feel like you learned something, you were successful. So it's not just about money. It's not just about fame. It's your own personal experience as well.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. And wish you luck and probably see you at the next Wizard World or... wherever. What are the cons that you're going to be going to next, just so readers
I'm
know?
Actually, my very next one is actually going to be in Tampa, Florida, the
okay.
MetroCon, if you've heard of it.
I actually just did another booth down that way.
Yeah.
A couple of artists will be driving down there, I believe, tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
my next one is actually going to be MetroCon in Tampa, but then it's quite funny because right after that, I'm driving all the way back up here to the Liberty City Anime Convention in New York.
Wow. Okay.
And that's all happening in August. So, yeah.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you, and wish you luck.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
Yes.
I know I ask a lot of these authors how they got to where they are, but I'm hoping to help, you know, up-and-coming authors or people who are thinking about writing books, you know, give them a path to it, too, through people who have actually made it.
And of course, you're also hoping they'll reveal the secret sauce so that you can start your book or get your book finished.
Well, you got to have a hobby.
Yes. No, but, you know, again, another great interview without me. I feel like I'm not needed.
Got to keep up with me, Dan. Got to keep up with me. Okay, so on with the next set of authors. We did a lot of authors.
A lot of authors this year. Around. Yes.
Yeah, we did have one author combo with artists. So
yes.
That was that got us back to our roots. But there just seemed to be at these conventions a lot of up-and-coming authors and a lot of really neat books, and not just comic books. These are all – a lot of these are novels. But I don't know if our listeners have seen this or experienced it, but there is a huge explosion of new authors out there because of the ability to self-publish.
Yes.
Now, it's a double-edged sword. I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, where you can have – I mean, you can have like a Dresden type guy, or you can have Pet Bear God. And I'm not going to tell you what that book has, which book has that, because you don't really want to read those books. Trust me, I got through to episode 3 and finally had to put it down. I've never not gotten through a book before, ever. But the other side of that, you get a lot of writers like this next one. Which is Scarge from Scargen.com, right? But
Casey.
It's Casey Caracciolo. Caracciolo, that's it. Ha ha! Got it in the fourth try.
Casey, some Italian-sounding name. That's what I was going to say.
Oh, not good, not good. So, he's written two books, The Shadow of the Gauntlet and The Dragon Within.
Right, which is all part of the series, which is Scargen. And I noticed his booth because he also had a lot of illustrations or drawings hanging up that were illustrations. So he's both an artist and an author.
Yeah. And he's got kind of a hook too, because each one of his books seems to have an icon. I mean, he's coming up with a symbol for each one, and it's damn cool. We sat down and talked with him for actually quite a long time, I think this one is.
Yes, and his the icon for his first book is the robot. Was that what it was?
Yep, that's the robot icon. It almost looks like it's from Portals, but
almost. But he doesn't want to get sued.
Well, you know, it's in all honesty, I hear the Aperture Science song every time I see the icon. So.
All right. Well, why don't we let Casey explain his books and his art to our audience?
This is John for Superhero Speak, along with
Dave,
and we're sitting here with. All right, I'm gonna murder this one. Casey, Caracciolo.
That's really close.
I knew a French is Cellio once.
It's the American version is Caracciolo, but the Italian is probably Caracciolo.
Caracciolo. Okay. Cool. And you have written several books, one of which is The Shadow of the Gauntlet.
Yes, that's the first book in the Scargen series.
And the thing that drew us to your booth is that not only do you have books and you're an author, but you're also an artist, which must give you either a very unique perspective on a lot of the goings on here, or must be like the worst of both worlds.
No, it's a unique perspective. I can appreciate how much work goes into the art side of things, and I can also appreciate how writers are usually not valued as highly as they should be.
This is true. This is very true.
Which one did you start first? Was it art or writing?
Animation was my background, so it's almost simultaneous with that. You're always dealing with story, characters, that sort of thing. So probably art at a younger age, but then the story came right after that as far as writing and creating worlds and that sort of thing.
So through your art, you suddenly decided, this looks cool. I could write about this.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I feel like a lot of times, even with the books now, like I'll doodle and sketch things before I start to write chapters or characters.
Oh, that's interesting. Not something a lot of people can do, too. Is that something like writing a outline or whatever that some other writers do?
I do that, too. The first book, I didn't at first. I wrote like the first 3 chapters without knowing where I was going with it. And I was like, I should probably figure this out. And I wrote a fairly extensive outline, and it helps tremendously to do that if you're writing. But I kind of do it outline and then draw the characters at the same time. And it all kind of comes together that way.
Okay. Well, all right. We'll skipped over a little bit here. So you wrote The Shadow of the Gauntlet, and how many other books did you write?
Well, right now we have 2 out, The Shadow of the Gauntlet and The Dragon Within, and I'm currently working on The Broken Demon, which will be the 3rd book in the series.
Okay. What's the elevator pitch for this?
The elevator pitch would be the magic of Harry Potter with the futuristic wonder of Star Wars.
Okay.
So set in the future, but on Earth, magic, but flying cars, robots. We call them ARTIFs, like artificial intelligence, holographic displays. But instead of like how Harry Potter, they fight with wands, it's more like comics or anime where they fight like a little bit more intense battles. It's not so much like one-on-one like you see in a lot of like the Harry Potter stuff.
Right, okay. Right.
And is it young adult to mature? Or?
Young adult is where the start-off point is, but we have fans as young as 8 and as old as 65. So.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And where'd you get the idea for it?
Well, you know, you watch Harry Potter, and I always thought to myself, why isn't it like a 12-on-12 wizard battle? Like, why is it 1 versus 1? And it always seems to end up like, until the last book, honestly.
Well, it's a ninja rule. You know, the ninjas can only come at you one at a time.
Exactly. And that way you can defeat them. But beyond that, like, I liked Harry Potter, but it was very English-centric, and I kind of wanted to explore some of the other mythologies of the world, everywhere from Africa to Japan, China, Norse, American, everything from Native American to even Salem gets mentioned in this. So, try to make it a little bit more international.
Very cool.
Actually, I was going to, one of the things I wanted to point out, what drew me here, is you have some mashup art. Which I love. Like, you have a Pokemon Adventure Time mashup. is that something that you love? Where do those ideas kind of come from?
It's just, you think of, like, stuff that I like that I can combine in a weird way. I know that sounds odd, but, like, I have a robots playing poker, and it's, like, all the different robots from different genres. And honestly, like, not to be, like, it's what's going to sell. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true.
Like,
I'm not
the biggest Pokemon fan, but I used to watch the cartoon, and I know a lot of people that love it. And I wanted to be able to incorporate that into something that I love, and I love Adventure Time. So it seemed like a good mix of... Like, I could see Finn pretending to play Pokemon, if that makes sense.
Right.
It does.
Or finding a Pokeball in this futuristic world and, like, you know.
So since you're an artist and a writer, why didn't you combine the ideas and do it as a comic book?
Because that takes a whole nother level of work on the drawing side of things. And the story is pretty epic. The first book alone would probably have to be, I mean, probably, like, 10 comic books, if not more. And, you know, if anyone that reads comics, that's almost a year's worth of work for someone that does it solely, you know, let alone someone that's doing it full-time but part-time, if that makes any sense.
Right, right.
Full-time hours, but it's not my day job.
That's funny, because a lot of people would say that if we weren't who we are and had talked to so many authors and artists and comic book creators, a lot of people might seem to think that comic books is the easier one. Then you go into full-fledged writing.
No,
but
well, I mean, people, again, disregard the writing that goes into comic books.
Yeah.
I mean, even if there's panels with just drawings, there was still writing involved in that. It's not like, you know, the artist assumes what's going to happen between panels. Like, there's... Yeah. And the guys that do both, I mean, they're incredible to me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Not that wouldn't be a direction I'd love to do a graphic version of this, you know? That's why I do some of the drawings of the characters.
Huh.
So people, especially at Comic-Cons, get a better understanding of what direction I'm going in.
Like, Jim Butcher is a writer. You know who he is. He's done... They're doing graphic novels, all of his stuff now, too.
Yeah, it seems like... Even, like, George R. R. Martin, they did a graphic novel version. You know, he's... Obviously, they have the TV show.
Yep.
But yeah, it's something I would love to do in the future. I mean, my dream is like an animated series would be amazing, or a movie. Let's be honest.
Right. Now, and actually, your art style does lend itself to like an animated feature.
Yeah, like I love simple design, so that's my big thing.
Yeah, the logos that you've got, I like the logos. I mean, they're simple, but they're very distinct.
Yeah, I mean,
and it makes it like I've seen your card actually, and a couple of other people were holding it. And I noticed the robot symbol. It's that easy
to
pick it out.
Yeah, like the idea. I mean, let's be honest. If you're doing this in this day and age, you have to brand yourself. And you want something that's simple and memorable that people can associate with what you're doing.
Very true.
Yeah. So when you were going through this, I mean, how long have you been a writer again? It's like
my whole life. But this series I started, I want to say 6-7 years ago, began it. The first book came out in 2013, the second one in 2015, and the third one should be next year.
So nowadays, there's it's easy to get self-published. There's plenty of them out there, and it's a growing market. But back then, not that that was that far long ago, but how did you handle getting yourself published?
Well, so self-publishing is really easy to do poorly. It's not as easy to do well. And we're actually Roundstone Publishing, so we're technically independently published.
Oh, okay.
But we are Roundstone Publishing. I did a lot of research, and sometimes they don't want let you write what book you want to write. And I had a clear vision. And don't get me wrong, this is passed by a bunch of people. We have editors. I have a professional copy editor, professional layout person that does the interior stuff. So the book looks as legit as it can. But that's what it goes into. Like I said, self-publishing is easy. Doing it right is hard.
So when you say self-publishing, though, it's you went through Amazon?
Or? Create Space is the company that prints our books currently. Okay. Basically, we send them everything, and then they send us the final product. And it's worked out pretty well for us as far as shows. They're fast turnaround.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
If you buy my book on Amazon, it's Prime eligible. So, you know, the turnaround time's obviously a day or two.
Yeah. And you found that, we're here at a Comic-Con, an Entertainment Expo now for Wizard World.
Ouch.
Yeah. So do you find a lot of people, do you find fans coming up to you? I mean, you've been around long enough that people...
Today was one of those days where I've had a bunch of people come back from prior years and from, like, the last Comic-Con I did in the area looking for the second book, which is great and humbling in a good way, you know, like it...
Right.
It means I'm on the right track, I think.
So you have your fans come up and say, okay, when's the next book coming out? I want to know.
Yeah. And I'm trying not to be George R. R. Martin with that, you know, trying to get him out as fast as possible.
Yeah.
He's allowed to be like that.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're going to have the final season of Game of Thrones before the book is out.
Yeah, which, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
He seems to be happy.
Well... Wow. Yeah, you know, while he picks up his money, you know, the money bag loot and all, just goes to the bank every day.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing. I think Neil Gaiman said it about George R. R. Martin. George R. R. Martin is not your bitch, you know? Like, he's going to do what he's going to do, and his product's going to be good, but his process might take him longer than some other authors.
Right.
His story will be done by somebody else, unfortunately, before it's done by him, but he's also telling them how it's going to end. And I'm sure there'll be enough differences between the books, like there already are, and the series where, you know, someone that likes to read is going to love reading those books, even if they know the final ending.
But given the complexity of his stuff, he could leave some very important, very interesting things out, right?
Yeah, of course. The book. Because he's already, that's already happened with the series.
You want to talk to your...
Yeah, it's good. You drew a Joker.
Oh.
Notice that.
So, if someone came up and wanted to start writing, what kind of advice would you give them?
It's like everything else. You just have to practice. You have to do. Like, it's kind of the joke of artists and writers at these shows. People will walk up and they'll be like, oh, I draw. Like, it's that easy. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
It's not that easy. You have to be drawing every day. You have to be writing every day. You have to be reading if you want to be a writer. You have to, it's just like, you know, when you become an artist, you're going to try everyone else's style before you get your own, you know?
Right, exactly.
I actually met Chuck Jones, the animator, before he passed away.
Wow.
It was cool. It was like a talk he did in Philly. And he basically says you have a million bad drawings in you. And I feel like it's the same with writing. Like, you have to get past that. And to me, writing is rewriting. Editing is the most important, crucial part of writing. Get the first draft done. It's going to suck. I mean, everyone will tell you that. It's going to suck.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't fix a sculpture until you have the fucking the blob of clay up there. You know what I mean? You need the start off point. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people come up and go, yeah, I want to write a book. I'm like, well, you didn't. Or do it. Like, that's all. That's the simple part of it. Like, if it's in you, you're going to find the time and find the energy to do it. not everyone can do it. It's a very solitary thing. I'm not going to lie. Like, some nights sitting there writing, it's like...
Oh, yeah.
There's no... You know, you feel like, I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why I'm doing this. But then, you know, you have... I mean, for me, like, when the 14-year-old boy walks up and can't wait for the third book, like, I'm like, I have to keep writing. You know? I mean, that's right, the way right. it is.
There's no instant gratification. Like, if you're an artist over there, within a half an hour, here you go.
And, yeah, yeah, you know, for commissions, you're right.
For writing, you're like, how long does it take you to write a book? But,
well, that's seems to be a varying scale these days. So the first book took me about 5 years, but honestly, I didn't know what I was doing. Second book took me less than 2 years, and the third one looks like it's going to be 3 years. But that being said, the third one's going to be longer than the other two. So it's funny. It's a different process every time, and I didn't really realize that when I got into it. In a good way. Like,
does your plot look like the George R. R. Martin kudzu diagram? Of
it's like, you know, you have a lot of, basically you're juggling in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I have a final, I know where it's going. I know a lot of the points that I'm going to hit along the way. Mm-hmm. But if I knew everything, it would kind of be boring, you know?
Right.
And I don't know if that's what he's struggling from. Like, he obviously knows where it's going, but he, my thing is like, the third book is got new characters, a new city, and if you're doing the job right, you have to flesh that stuff out. You know, you can't just like, I'm not writing this to write it fast. I'm writing to write it well.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny because if you're, again, going back to the publisher thing, if you're working for a regular publisher, and I think this happened to Robert Asprin, his Myth Adventure series. He got a contract with them, and he kept missing deadlines, but it was because you can't just punch out these funny, amazing books that he was writing with the Myth Adventure series. And I'm not sure exactly what happened with the publisher, but I think he was, you know, he disappeared for a while and then came back with a new publisher.
That's one of the reasons, again, like, publishers obviously are great. They move the industry, but at the same time, I think that, you know, they're under the same pressure that movies are right now. Like, yeah. You want almost like a sure thing, you know? And if you don't have a sure thing, they're really not going to back you money-wise. Like, they're not going to throw marketing at you. And I thought to myself, if I'm going to have to basically hustle on the marketing side of things, and I'm going to have to do all that stuff anyway, why don't I do it myself and see? And I'm a little bit of a control freak, so there's that. But, like, you know, at one point... My wife's my first editor, Christine, and I said, do you think I should, you know, self-publish? She's like, you, not even should you, you have to. Like, there's no way you're going to let someone tell you, like, you can't do this, you can't do that. You have this grand idea, and you need to see it through.
Nice.
Cool. So, one of the, not to keep you too long, so one of the questions we normally like to wrap up on is, how do you measure success?
Like I said, you know, I think I read somewhere, and not that this is the quantity I'm looking for, but if you have 1,000 fans, you're successful. Not monetarily necessarily, but like that's enough people that are going to tell other people that are going to tell other people. And I'm not there. I mean, we've sold way more than 1,000 books, but like I wouldn't say we have 1,000 hardcore fans yet. Mm-hmm. But my measure of success is honestly coming to these shows and have anyone come back that wants to talk about the book that is so like... enamored with the characters that, you know, they're asking you questions that you might not even have thought about yet. So
right.
that's what I, success is having anyone want to read your book besides yourself, quite frankly.
Yeah, cool. Good.
So
I like it.
Where can people find you and your books online?
Yeah.
So, Skargen.com is the website, SCARGEN.com. But we're on Amazon, we're on Barnes and Noble, all the usual places to find books online. And this year we'll be at Boston Comic Con and Terrific Con in Massachusetts for the rest of the year. We're doing a little less shows this year, so I can concentrate on writing the third book. And yeah. We're Kickstarter funded, so our Kickstarter should start hopefully in August. If not, you know, that'll change. I'll have it on the website and everything. So
okay,
cool.
And you can follow me on all the things.
All right. No problem. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
So, see, you can do it all.
That's just, you know, sometimes I get upset at the sheer amount of talent pouring out of the ears of some of these people we're meeting. I wonder why not me?
Because you have a hard time focusing.
On what? What were we talking about? I'm sorry, I didn't take my Ritalin this morning, so, you know.
See, this, I've been, you know, it's talk like this that makes you end up seeing stuffed bunnies talking to you and doing weird things. Next thing you know, there's a puddle of blood on the floor with a smile. Oh, wait a minute.
That sounds familiar.
That sounds very familiar. Can I be talking about our good Bun friend, Bun? Richard Rivera?
You're talking about Bun Bun? Bugs Bunny?
No, he wrote Stabbity Bunny.
Stabbity Bunny. Right.
Go ahead, do it.
Stabby, stabby. It's a stabbity bunny. Oh, look at that little poor stabbity bunny. It's so cute and stabby. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for that.
No, you're
it's
not.
It's just that every time I see it, it's just, it's stuck in my, this is one of those few, one of the few things, like, you never know what's gonna trigger it.
Yes.
But sometimes things will just stick in my head, and this is one of them. I saw them once at, I think I saw them at the very first, was it 2 years ago? At the Great Philly Comic Con,
mm-hmm.
and ever since then, I just can't get them out of my head. Stabby, 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 stabby bunny. Oh, and I am holding their hardcover book, the collected issues of 1 through 6, in my hands.
Yes.
And according to what they've said, and I haven't gotten through it yet because I'm still working my way through all the issues that I got from Zenoscope. This is going to explain the origins of Stabby Bunny.
Yes, but we don't. He doesn't reveal what it is. There's no spoilers. But it's a beautiful hardback collected edition. It was just released right before this convention, so it's brand spanking new.
It is beautiful too, and the artwork is just unbelievable.
Yes. So let Richard and. The magic of Stabbity Bunny take you away, as he'll explain all of this.
Is it on?
Mic check.
I don't
check.
Know.
Mike.
Am I?
Is there a guy mic around here? Mic check.
I'm looking for a mic.
Mic. All right. Looks. Yeah. Looks good.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Stabbity Bunny.
We're back.
Richard Rivera. So, how are you doing, sir?
Fantastic. It's been a great con, and good to see you guys again.
Oh, no. We love your book. We had to come see you.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
So how's the con going for you this year?
Pretty well. Today has been very busy with lots of fans, new and old, picking up the new hardback edition. Well, we've collected issues 1 through 6.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yes, and the last time you were on our show, you had talked about we didn't know what was going on with Stabbity Bunny yet at that point, because you only think you had up to issue 4 out.
Right, and just to kind of go recap the quick elevator pitch.
Yes.
It's evolved a little bit,
yep.
As the book goes, but we like to say that Stabbity Bunny could take place at the intersection of Nightmare on Elm Street and Sesame Street, where a 100-year-old plush bunny that's been passed down in one family through the generations and his current little girl, who's 7, her name is Grace, must battle evil. Which is not to say that later in the book, Mom and Grandma don't get involved as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you had said that it is revealed what's going on. We won't spoil it.
Yeah, no spoilers on this one. Not this
but
time.
But people should be running out and getting the collected edition so they can find out what's going on with Stabbity Bunny.
Well, absolutely, yes. The 4, 5, and 6 definitely start answering a lot of questions. And by the end of the issue, you know exactly what's going on, whether it be Stabbity or some people speculated that it was actually Grace doing something, because you never see what's happening, you just see shadows on the wall,
right,
etc.
Right.
But you will know exactly what's happening, and that's a problem. And that's how we conclude the first book.
Wow. So then where are we going after that? Yeah, when's the next issue coming out? Where are we going with the story?
Can you reveal that without revealing anything?
Well,
okay, yeah, without revealing too much, of course.
Well, I've got all the issues written, so just need to go into art production for 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We do them one issue at a time and release floppy versions and do a collection at each 6-issue point. It kind of depends. In some ways, I would like to take a little bit of time, sell some hardbacks, get people caught up on that before I resume the series. But we do have some talks with a publisher
And if that publisher comes through for us, then we're going to need to immediately jump on to number 7.
Wow.
Okay.
Because it would be published as a monthly book. And so even though we've got 6 months of cushion, it takes us just a little bit more than a month to get a book together. So we would need to jump right back on.
Right, right.
Wow.
So who is the... have you used the same artist through all, or...?
I have. And, okay. We've used the same artist, Dwayne Biddix, fantastic illustrator. And that's been... his art has evolved in the book as we've gone forward. And we kind of settled into the style that I think is the permanent style as of about issue 3. But we have... the color artist is Liesl Buenaventura. Okay. And she's been fantastic. She has that extra layer of atmosphere and mood to the pages. And once we had her, the team was... nearly complete, except for James Reed, who's our letterer, and of course our editor, Wayne Hall.
Right. And your plan is to continue with that same team going forward?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's fully committed to getting that series out.
Cool. Do you have an end goal in mind, or are you just going to keep going as long as you can?
Oh, no. I've written all 36 issues.
Oh, okay.
There's a beginning, middle, and end. But each 12-issue arc ends pretty definitively, because you never know what you don't know, and that's what actually will always spark the next arc. So should we only do 12, should that happen, then the readers will feel fully satisfied, the story concludes, they know what's going on, no cliffhangers. But of course there's always another layer, and when that layer is peeled back, that's what will start the second arc and so on. But Grace is 7, then she is 12 in the second arc, and she is 17 in the last arc.
Okay.
And after that, we do not follow her to college to skip class and eat ramen noodles, etc. The interesting part of her story is done.
Nice. You know, on my way down to another event, of which I will not talk about, on the escalator down, I heard people talking about Stab Bunny.
So, wow, that's great.
Yeah, and that's not the first time in the con that I've heard people. I've been near people who actually mentioned it. And of course, you know, it's an unusual thing. So you hear Stabbity Bunny, it's like, oh, I know what that is. Whoa, oh, okay, you're now talking to me. And it's like, so.
Yeah, well, the name and, you know, the kind of iconic for us symbol of the bunny standing in the pool of blood, which has a smiley face scrawled into it. You know, that's on T-shirts, that's on glassware, that's on a lot of things. And I just think that we have so many times when people just walk by and they kind of look and they've got to say the name, and since it's a con and they'll be back around, I don't always say, oh, come here, let me tell you about it, just let them enjoy just the name, etc. But I hear about it all the time, and I got to tell you, we go to cities all across the U.S. and now that we've got a year or two under our belt, there is not a single city that I've returned to where I don't get people coming back wanting the new issues. And even cities where I've never been, people come up wanting the new issues. Nice. So, I mean, that's just fantastic. Getting the story out was the whole point, and it looks like we're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
So, are your books only available at the shows, or do you sell online as well?
I have stabbitybunny.com. That's 2 B's and 1 T. StabbityBunny.com. And never fear, should you put stabbityrabbit.com, that is redirected to stabbitybunny.com. But we have a shop there. We sell everything. I haven't updated the site in a little while. I've been too busy running back and forth to London and doing some other things. And getting the book together wasn't a major accomplishment. But now that that's done, we'll be slowing down a little bit, putting in the new items in the store. And like I said, hopefully we might be looking at national distribution soon.
Cool. So, London. What were you doing in London?
Going to some of the comic stores there. Okay. Talking to the owners, and Stabbity Bunny will be in a few shops in London, too.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So, we're happy about that. Now it can be an international book.
I mean, English to English, but different cultures. It still translates well over there.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, as long as we, you know, certain words aren't interchangeable, but none of those words are in Stabbity Bunny.
But over there, they kind of think he's some weird murderous Pokemon or something, right?
Well, that is like the first assumption, I think, of 70% of the people, if not more. You know, you see Stabbity, you see Bunny, and you're like, oh, it must be a murderous, rampaging bunny roaming the countryside, randomly destroying people. And that would be an interesting book, too, but... really, we like to concentrate on the mystery and horror of the story that we've set up. And like I said, it's all going to be very different going forward with issue 7, because the readers know, the mom knows, the grandmother knows what's going on. Grace always knew.
Okay.
So I think I've asked you this before, but where did the inspiration come from? Like, what kind of stories do you enjoy that where this came from?
Well, I mean, the stories I enjoy would not have spawned the series. I have to admit, I don't really watch a lot of horror movies, and that might be horrible of me, but I don't. I like horror suspense where there's a lot of story to it. I don't care for horror that's mainly gore.
Right, right.
And I have nothing against that genre. It's fantastic. Everybody should enjoy what they enjoy. It's just really not for me. And so it kind of follows that my story wouldn't be gore-centric either.
Right. Is it because I kind of get a Twilight Zone feeling from how the story's presented.
Yep. Right. And I got to tell you, too, Twilight Zone, but as far as the closest thing I could tell you that would come, and I can't believe that the writer's name, I can't think of it right now, but Jim Aparo and fantastic writer whose name I'm not thinking of right now did some Spectre stories
The
70s where he was just the wrathful killing people, turning them into wood and sawing them into pieces, etc.
Right, right.
So some of that.
Okay, cool, yeah. Cool. So so people listening, what shows coming up are you going to be at?
We will be at Heroes.
In D.C.,
in a
couple
of weeks. That's Heroes is in Charlotte.
Oh, Charlotte, okay.
We will be at San Diego. We will be at New York. We will be at Spooky Empire.
Cool.
And either Tampa and or SuperCon, depending on how things work out with manpower. I'm going to have to choose one of them because they happen on the same weekend. I would like to do both, but if I don't have people to man the booth, then we will choose and we'll update that on our site. Our site has our coming appearances.
Okay.
Our site has all the creative people on the book, and has all of their Instagram, Facebook, etc. If they are artists, it has their sites linked to their artwork. We have all the characters with profiles. We have, of course, the merchandise page. We have the front page, which tells you about just upcoming events, which might not be convention appearances, and the latest things going on with Stabity. So StabityBunny.com is a place to find out those things. But even more, kept more current, is Facebook, which when something happens, will almost immediately appear on Facebook.
Right.
So like us and follow us on Facebook and join about 10,000 other people.
And a question I know we already asked you when you were on the show before, but sometimes the answer changes, and that is, how do you measure success?
Well, I kind of already mentioned it accidentally, not knowing what the question would be, but really going to conventions and having even one person come up eager to see your book, eager to know what else you've done, expressing that they really enjoy the story.
Right.
But to have dozens of people come up each time, I mean, I guess there's different levels of success, but being able to fill your day interspersed with people that love the book, that's kind of
right.
It.
Cool. That's a good answer. Good.
Thank you.
All right. So thanks for your time. And anyone listening, I highly recommend, please go check out StabbityBunny.com.
Yep.
You won't be disappointed.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
John, put that knife down.
I don't need no knife. I'm just wondering why he decided to make Stabbity Bunny a xenomorph at the end.
No, no spoilers.
I mean, it actually makes more sense than Prometheus did, but, you know.
Wow.
Go figure.
A lot of things made more sense than Prometheus did.
Yeah. At least Stabbity Bunny knows how to run away from something instead of, you know, instead of running away from it as it's coming towards you, run perpendicular.
Yes. But he's definitely become a good friend of the show. We enjoy the book, and we hope you guys check it out. And there are links in the description of the episode to all of these fine people's websites and or places you can find their books, because Maxina doesn't have an official site.
But she is on Goodreads.
Yes. And Amazon.
Right. As is Casey Caracciolo.
Yes.
So we're, you know, if anything, you can go to Goodreads. They're also on Amazon, and we'll have other links below for their main sites and such.
Yes. So.
Maxina Storybrooke has a Patreon.
Yes, but so do we.
Yes, we have a Patreon. Did you know that? We have a Patreon. It's lonely.
Yes, it is.
It's very lonely.
There's a link to our Patreon at the description below. You know, maybe you guys should check it out. If you're not into t-shirts, maybe you're into bonus material. Some of that available to our patrons. There's other rewards available. Nothing spectacular, but hey, we're trying. So if you don't like, you know, people have said that, oh, I want to donate, but I just want to do one-time donation. And it's unfortunately Patreon is either set up where you do a subscription, a monthly thing, or every time you pay, every time like an episode's released. So if you don't like that, now you have the option of buying a t-shirt and you get something out of it.
Yeah. Just remember, $5 a month gives you about 5 minutes of silence from Dave. Once per episode, you can shut him up. Just $5 a month. Won't you give? Please give, because I can't take it anymore. My ears are bleeding.
Oh, my God.
So,
I think that is a good place to end it for this week.
Yes. Let the beatings commence. I mean, let's end this. Yes.
So, yeah, check out all these great authors or writers and comic book creators. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out our new t-shirt shop. And as always, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.